It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, three Milwaukee rivers are undergoing testing for substances like caffeine and ibuprofen. We'll get the details.
First, over the last few weeks, President-elect Donald Trump has been announcing his cabinet picks. They include people like Elaine Chao for the Department of Transportation, who has gotten praise from some establishment Republicans.
But there are some more controversial choices in the mix, too. There have been questions raised about Trump's pick for Secretary of State, ExxonMobil Chief Executive Rex Tillerson. Senators from both parties have raised concerns about his ties to Russia.
With confirmation hearings for Trump's picks on the horizon, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said that Democrats are planning for a detailed process.
Shirley Ann Warshaw joins us now to talk more about the cabinet hearings. She's a presidential scholar at Gettysburg College. Shirley Ann, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, I want to maybe eliminate a lot of the drama up front. It sounds like you're not expecting any of these cabinet picks to be rejected when all is said and done.
Well,
is that right?
I think it's unlikely. Historically, we tend to approve, the Senate does approve the president's nominees. Excuse me. The last time we saw a cabinet officer rejected was with George H.W. Bush when the Senate rejected John Tower for Secretary of Defense, and Tower had somewhat of a history of womanizing and alcohol, and the Senate was worried about him being compromised as Secretary of Defense. And that's when Dick Cheney, of course, takes over as Secretary of Defense. Cheney was the second pick. Historically, they may give the cabinet officers a tough time in the confirmation hearings, but they tend to let them through. I think in this particular case, the Democrats are going to have to think long and hard about who they want to try and block. And it may be Tillerson, but I think they're more likely to go after Scott Pruitt at EPA, who is, famously sued EPA as much as he can, is a climate denier, says, oh no, there is no climate change problem. And, absolutely against, Obama's, power plan.
Before we get into some of the particulars about those candidates, we used to think, if you've got 40-plus senators, you can filibuster, you can really put this off.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true
right.
Anymore, is it? Because of what Democrats did when they were in charge.
Exactly. Well, it's an interesting story, is that the Republicans in the Senate, we go back famously to Minority Leader Senator McConnell of Kentucky at the time, and he said his main goal is to do everything he possibly could, and this is in 2009 when President Obama comes in, to make President Obama's life miserable. Everything possible. And not only was he going after legislation, which he did, but he really went after almost every single nominee, every board, every commission, every cabinet officer, every sub-cabinet officer, to make his life utterly miserable. And there were numerous appointments that President Obama had made that were sitting there for months, some for years. And finally, in 2013, Senator Reid said, okay, enough is enough. We're going to change the rules and make it a simple majority, and we're not going to let them filibuster these nominees. Yes to Supreme Court nominees, but all other executive branch nominees. And they knew that 2014 was coming up and there was a chance they could lose the Senate, which made it even more important to change the rules so they could get everybody on the docket through before the 14 elections came up. And that's, of course, what happened. The Democrats lost the Senate in 14, but at least they got through everybody that was sitting there for such a long time, many since 2009.
Now, though, Republicans control the Senate with 52,
right.
I believe it is, votes.
Yep.
President-elect Trump will be making these appointments. Democrats, on their own, can't really do anything to reject any of these cabinet appointees. Is that right?
Right, because what Reid essentially did is he said it's a simple majority. You can't filibuster executive branch nominees. Simple majority, and the Republicans, as you said, have 52 votes right now. So it really will take three, because remember, it can't be 50-50 because the vice president can cast the tie-breaking vote, and he's a Republican. It'll be Mike Pence. So they need three Republicans. And they might get three Republicans, assuming that every single Democrat, what's Manchin going to do on some of these things, for instance? Assuming they get 100%, all 48 Democrats, they need three Republicans. And I think that three Republicans may vote one time, for instance, CPA administrator. Twice seems unlikely. That would be Tillerson. So, you know, the odds are that they're going to get all or maybe one through.
Talking to Shirley Ann Warshaw from Gettysburg College about President-elect Trump's cabinet nomination so far, their prospects before the Senate come next year. Let's get into that Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State appointment.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen concerns raised, as we mentioned earlier, senators from both parties who are worried about Russia already and then saying,
right.
Oh, here's this guy with ties to Russia because of the business he's been running for the last bunch of years. Is that
right.
going to be something that maybe a John McCain even would vote against someone
yeah,
for?
Yeah, again, here's the issue. John McCain is, to some extent, an establishment Republican. And he may have disagreed with George W. Bush on some issues, the torture issue with the O'Fine detainee bill, for instance. But, you know, he's a mainstream Republican. And the mainstream people, you know, Jim Baker, who was George H.W. Bush's Secretary of State, widely respected. Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Her deputy is NSA, Steve Hadley. These are people that are mainstream Republicans that have come out in support of Tillerson. And the Republicans want to regain some control, the mainstream Republicans, over the Republican Party and this administration. So for them to go against the mainstream Republican nominee seems unlikely to me.
And then you also mentioned Scott Pruitt as the EPA director nominee.
Right.
Who in the Republican Senate might turn against him?
Yeah, I think that several might go against it. You know, broadly, I don't think any of the Southern, I think the Southern Senate bloc is going to stay very, very supportive of every single nominee. Which means, you know, it's going to be one of the Northerners, you know, a Maine senator. You know, I think you're going to see a couple of the Northern Midwestern senators in my home state of Pennsylvania. Senator Toomey, for instance, could be one of those senators. Senator Collins of Maine, that's two. You know, I think you'll see some breaking of this. Your Wisconsin senator, Senator Johnson. We'll see.
So Democrats are saying, even though they don't necessarily have a good shot at blocking people, it looks like they may try to extend out hearings as much as possible and get as much bad PR for President-elect Trump as possible, targeting billionaire or high income nominees, a Health and Human Services person who seems to be into the idea of privatizing Medicare, which Donald Trump said he wouldn't cut. So what do you make of the prospects for at least a PR pulpit here?
Oh, I think you've nailed it. I think that's exactly what's going to happen, that the Democrats are going to use as much of the bully pulpit as they possibly can to make sure the American public, which I don't think the American public really does, understand who is going to be in this cabinet. Right now, there are names that have been in the paper here or there, but I don't think most people really are following this. So the more that the Senate Democrats can use their bully pulpit during this process to say, you know, do you really understand who these people are, I think is going to be very important.
I want to talk about one more appointment coming that a lot of people are watching, I'm sure, a Supreme Court justice nominee.
Right.
Donald Trump will be able to fill that seat that hasn't been filled by and won't be filled by Merrick Garland. Do the same rules apply, or can Democrats actually filibuster that under current Senate rules?
Well, right now, they appear to be able to still filibuster the Supreme Court nominees. But again, rules can be changed. So let's not underestimate the power of the majority party to change rules. Right now, that holds. I think that's going to be very contentious. Again, I think you've made a very important point that the Democrats are going to make hay on that. And they remain. Remember, the Democrats are beside themselves on what the Republicans in the Senate did to Merrick Garland. So they're going to make this as absolutely difficult as they possibly can. And the names appear to be coming out of Heritage and being extremely conservative, far more than either Alito or Roberts were in the Bush years. So I think that's going to be quite a fight.
To be continued. Shirley Ann, thanks a lot for joining us.
My great pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
That was Shirley Ann Warshaw. She's a presidential scholar at Gettysburg College. She joined us to talk about the upcoming hearings for President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet appointees. It can sound like a cliche to point out that humans are connected to the living world around them, but new water testing in Milwaukee is proving just that. Over the Thanksgiving holiday, scientists and volunteers sampled water in three Milwaukee area rivers. They're testing for things like vanilla and cinnamon, but also ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and caffeine. Some of the results are still forthcoming, but amounts of household drugs and other substances are showing up in the water samples.
Our next guest is working to test those samples. Todd Miller joins us now. He's an associate professor in the Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. Todd, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Veronica. Happy to be here.
Well, Todd, how do substances like caffeine and ibuprofen end up in, for instance, Milwaukee's rivers, the three you tested?
Sure. There's a variety of ways. First off, wastewater is a major source of these compounds in our waterways. Generally speaking, wastewater treatment does remove many of these compounds, but some of them make it through and end up in Lake Michigan and other waterways. The other thing is that Milwaukee, like some other cities, have combined sewers that carry both rainwater runoff from the roadways as well as sewage. And during heavy rainstorms, some of those pipes can get backed up, and raw sewage rainwater mixture ends up going into the local waterways.
When you tested these rivers, which ones did you decide to focus on?
Well, we focused on the three major rivers in Milwaukee, the Menominee, Kinnickinnick, and Milwaukee River. And we had done some previous testing with a student group in the Milwaukee River in collaboration with the Urban Ecology Center a few years ago. And to our surprise, we found a variety of different pharmaceuticals as well as personal care products that people use in their homes every day.
You know, I suppose we think of those things as pretty separate. If I'm, you know, taking some ibuprofen, for instance, at home, I don't think about it as something that's going to end up in the river. So is the point of your testing that there is this link between the substances we take in our daily lives and the health of the water?
Yeah, this project, which, by the way, is funded by the Fund for Lake Michigan, is a great collaboration between university scientists and our community engagement partners, the Urban Ecology Center and Milwaukee Riverkeeper. And our real interest is building awareness that, you know, human behaviors and our choices do impact the local waterways. If I give you a good example is caffeine. I know that any day I can go out to Lake Michigan or the local rivers, take a water sample, analyze it, and 99% of the time I'm going to find caffeine. And that's just simply because people drink caffeinated beverages every day, and they typically don't take a break. And the same is true for, you know, drugs that you consume every day, such as Lipitor, cholesterol-lowering drugs. You have to take those every day. You don't stop. And therefore, we see this co-occurrence of, you know, caffeine and these cholesterol-lowering drugs at the same time. And if you just stay on the addictive track with caffeine, we also see things like cocaine show up in the waterways. So what I like to say is that the chemistry of local waterways really do reflect the human behaviors and choices that people make in the surrounding community.
Well, so to be frank about it, you're saying, you know, human beings imbibe a lot of these substances you're talking about, and then we pee them out and they end up in the water?
That's correct. And, of course, the other avenue for these things to end up in the water is flushing pharmaceuticals down the toilet, which is a large load of pharmaceutical waste that the wastewater treatment plants typically can't handle, and they go right into the waterways. And there's also sewage line breaks occasionally that happen, and as I mentioned, the combined sewers.
So, you know, most people are not willing to give up, for instance, their daily cup or two or three of coffee. So how do we keep the caffeine out of the water?
Right. This is a huge area of study. One improvement that's been made in Milwaukee is our deep tunnel project, which has reduced the amount of this rainwater sewage mixture that's gone into the lake. The other way is reducing runoff from rainwater. So we have projects that try to reduce the amount of water from rain that goes directly into the lake or the rivers, either using bioswales or rain gardens or rain barrels, and that can help cut down on these things. Certainly, we're not coming up with legislation to stop people from consuming legal substances like caffeine, but we do want people not to flush their drugs down the toilet. And recently, some personal care product active substances such as the antimicrobials, triclosan and triclocarban, have been banned for usage. So those will be coming off the market soon.
And I know there's been some concern about some substances, and I think these would be usually medications as being endocrine disruptors, which could interfere with maybe the fish that are in the rivers.
Yes, there is some research that shows that these endocrine disruptors can cause sex changes in fish. But as it stands right now, the majority of the chemicals, the pharmaceuticals that we find, are at fairly low levels. And this is really sort of an emerging field in toxicology studies to assess this really complex mixture of pharmaceuticals and other compounds and how they might impact, like you say, the development of fish.
Todd Miller is with us right now. He's an associate professor in the Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee, and he's talking with us about testing Milwaukee's rivers as an indicator of water quality. And Todd, around Thanksgiving, volunteers and scientists went out and they tested Milwaukee rivers before Thanksgiving and after Thanksgiving. And these research results are not in yet, but some of the things you were looking at there, vanilla and cinnamon. So is this likely to have shown up in the water around the holidays?
Well, other studies out west have shown similar things with regards to Thanksgiving and holidays. And it goes back to the idea of human behavior. Our behavior changes drastically around the holidays. You consume more, you eat more, you drink more, and you consume specialty things that you don't normally consume. You know, just this past weekend, my wife and I got out the recipes for Christmas cookies, and you're using ingredients in large quantities you might have not used before throughout the year, such as nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, and those are likely to show up in the waterways after the holidays.
Now, vanilla and cinnamon, I don't imagine, are worrisome, and you listed some that are maybe higher up on the list. Which ones in particular are you most concerned about in terms of the health of the water?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're concerned about cinnamon or nutmeg compounds being harmful. It's likely they get diluted out quite a bit. This is really just to provide an example for the community of how their behaviors do cause changes in water quality and the chemistry of the local waterways.
You mentioned earlier on a substance that was some sort of compound in cocaine, something like that. Is that the kind of thing that we just need to be aware of? Is it in such small amounts, or is this something that even in small amounts maybe could have an impact?
Any particular compound alone, such as there's a human metabolite of cocaine. We don't pee out cocaine, but we pee out a metabolite of it. Any of those compounds alone are likely to be in low enough concentrations to not cause problems, but it's really the additive effect of all of the compounds together. So, for example, there's many antibiotics we can detect in the environment, but each one of them is at fairly low concentrations. However, if you add them all up and their net effects, they may promote, for example, antibiotic resistance.
What is your sense of the health of the three rivers that you tested, not just based on this study, but what you know overall? How are they doing?
They have improved. Obviously, throughout the years, we've gotten a lot smarter about how we treat our wastewater and our industrial waste. Wastewater has probably been one of the largest sources of contamination of these rivers, and our wastewater treatment plants are now some of the best in the nation. So with that respect, they're much better. We do have issues with heavy metals, and we still use coal, obviously, in some places. There's coal piles that are sources of heavy metals and dioxins, as well as there's just these legacy contaminants that haven't gone away, such as the dioxins and PCBs. But overall, things have gotten a lot better.
Now, we're talking about three of Milwaukee's rivers, but ultimately, do the chemicals that you're talking about, do they wind up in Lake Michigan?
Yes, and we have lots of data showing the presence of these chemicals in Lake Michigan. However, the mixture changes as you go from upstream, downstream. Not all of these chemicals make it into the lake. Some of them are what we call hydrophobic, and they like to bind to other substances and then precipitate out, so they tend to stay up in the river, whereas others are more water-soluble and make it far out into Lake Michigan. One of those is metformin, which is a diabetic drug, and that's another one that we can detect on almost any day of the year, both in the river as well as in Lake Michigan.
Now, you mentioned that people should not flush their medications down the toilet. That's not the right way to do it. Are there other things that people can do if they want to help and they're listening to you now?
Yeah, I think one of the things that over the last, gosh, it's been almost a decade of policy decisions making is the use of antibacterial hand soaps and detergents. Much research has shown that regular old soap and hand washing is perfectly fine. The other source of potential hazardous chemicals are pesticides and herbicides, and how you dispose of those. Those need to be disposed of by a hazardous waste center and not put in your regular trash. I mentioned controls on rainwater runoff. Controlling runoff will prevent a lot of these chemicals from going directly into our waterways. And then, of course, the flushing of these substances down the toilet.
We leave it there. Todd, thanks a lot for joining us.
You bet.
That was Todd Miller, an associate professor in the Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. His research focuses on the distribution of natural and anthropogenic chemicals in lakes, drinking water, and wastewater. And he joined us there to talk about testing Milwaukee's rivers as an indicator of water quality.
The end of the year is when a lot of the big movies come out, like the release of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, this past weekend. It's also when nominations for some of the biggest film awards start to come out. Golden Globe nominations were just announced last week.
So we're looking back at the movies that came out in 2016, and we're looking forward to what's coming out before the end of the year. We want to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. What's the best movie you saw this past year? Would you recommend seeing it in theaters? And what are you excited to see in the last couple of weeks of 2016? Call us now at 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Reggie Ponder joins us now to talk about the best movies of 2016. He's known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for other media outlets as well. Reggie, welcome back.
Hey guys, I'm glad to be back, and I just want to warn you, I'm not a singer, but I will tell you this. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I'd say you are a singer.
Not bad. Better than me anyway. Before we get into individual movies, Reggie, 2016, on the whole, good year for movies?
Oh man, I think it's a really good year. I think the box office actually shows that, but I also think that the excitement that people have about certain movies shows that as well. There were some duds, and we know it. Every year you have some of those, but I think this was a really good year for 2016.
Well, let's take a look at the Golden Globe nominations, good measure of what was good this year. And the movie Manchester by the Sea came out last month, was nominated for Best Picture in the Drama category. Reggie, can you tell us about this one?
Yeah, this is a film about, and Casey Affleck plays the main character, and this is a film about a guy who has some real problems. I hate to be the spoiler guy, but he did something in his life that makes him depressed and despondent, and his whole life is like that. He's mean, he's angry, he's sullen, all any adjective you want to give, but he's trying to work through it. And as he tries to work through it, he has to go through certain people to do so, and people just love the performance by Casey in this one. There's a scene in this movie with Michelle Williams where they're in an alley, and it is so powerful. It's like I don't know, maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes at best. But it really shows you how really good writing and good acting will make you like a movie.
Here's a moment, not that scene from the movie with Casey Affleck. In the movie, has to take care of his nephew after the passing of his brother. Here's an exchange between the two.
You're a janitor.
So what?
You could do that anywhere. There's plenty of toilets and clogged up drains all over town.
I don't want to.
All my friends are here. I'm on the hockey team. I'm on the basketball team. I gotta maintain our boat now. I work on George's boat 2 days a week. I got two girlfriends, and I'm in a band. You're a janitor in Quincy. What the hell do you care where you live?
And Casey Affleck got a nomination for Best Performance in this one. You were saying it's a powerful performance.
It is definitely a powerful performance. I will tell you, for my liking, I didn't like the characters at all. And and when you do a movie like this, you have to do something, I think, that makes you have empathy for the characters or hate them enough that you love to watch them. And this is an outstanding movie, but for my taste, I just didn't like the characters. Those two fighting all the time just didn't work for me, even though the movie is a good movie, and I recommend people to check it out.
Interesting. Well, let's move on to another one in the drama category. Hell or High Water is another in the Best Picture category. And before we talk about it, let's listen to a snippet from the trailer. And Jeff Bridges, by the way, is also in this one. You'll hear him at the very end.
You hear about these bank robberies? You may get to have some fun before they send you off to the rocking chair yet.
I may have one hunt left in me.
So there's bank robberies. There's an effort to catch the people behind them. Tell us a little more about Hell or High Water, Reggie.
Yeah. This one is... I like westerns. It's not really a western, but it has that western kind of feel. And it's really this divorced father and his ex-con brother, and they kind of resort to these desperate measures, and that's how come you hear them talk about bank robbing. They resort to these desperate measures to try to save their family's ranch in West Texas. And it's all about trying to save the ranch. And it's a heist movie set in the West, and so it feels... It feels western-y to me as well. So this is a good movie, but the pace of it for some people might not be the – and I want to say the same thing for Manchester by the Sea. These are not necessarily fast-paced films, so they develop the character and they move along nicely. But some folks don't it's hard for some people to just kind of sit down and watch that story develop. And that's what happens during this time of the year.
This is not an easy breezy action heist movie.
Yeah. It's not one of those. It's not one of those where you're like, yeah. But it's good. Good job. They did a good job. And I think it's absolutely worthy of a Best Motion Picture nomination.
We're talking with Reggie Ponder right now about the best movies of 2016. We're going to be looking at the ones that are still to come out in the next couple of weeks. And Reggie, when you're looking at the crop of movies from 2016, what's at the top of your personal list?
The top of my list is Moonlight. This movie is absolutely fantastic, and people should go and see it. In addition to the fact that it deals with someone struggling with their sexuality, it also deals with this issue of being an outsider and how to fit in your community. And the performances in this are absolutely riveting. Barry Jenkins will probably get an Oscar nomination for director for this one. This is your eyes will be glued to the screen on this one.
Here's a moment from this. This is a local father figure / neighborhood drug dealer talking to the main character, Chiron. You can hear the ocean in the background after teaching him how to swim here.
At some point, you got to decide for yourself who you're going to be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
So talk a little bit more about the story here and Chiron and what he's going through.
So what this film does is it follows this one guy that he has a different name each trip. It's a three stanza, if you will. So he's little, then he's black, and what happens is they show him as a young boy and his struggles there. They show him as a young teenager and his struggles there, and then they show him as a man and his struggles there. And he's trying to navigate his community, but he's also trying to navigate his sexuality. There's a lot of things happening from not having a father figure there, and that's the scene actually reminiscent of the scene that you just played. The performances are really good, and when you get into actually you automatically get into it because you want to know what's happening with this character.
Sounds like a great one. And went on my list for sure. And I want to pivot now and talk about, we've been focusing on a lot of movies starring men so far. Let's talk about one starring a woman, Amy Adams in Arrival. This is another one on my to-see list over the holidays. It's been out for a little while, but I think it's going to be hanging around for a bit. What did you think of Arrival, Reggie?
So Amy puts in a good performance. What's really interesting is that Amy always it seems to just get all the roles that she wants, other than the roles that Meryl Streep plays. So it's good that they're not going up for the same ones. But it seems like those two women get whatever role they want. And this is a real solid role for her. But what I'll say about the movie is that this was one where the pace was slow for me. It was also one where the interest, I didn't love the movie, and I liked the acting. So Amy, kudos to her. I'm glad she's getting a nomination, but I can see why the Golden Globes did not give that movie a nomination, because it's not at the top of my list.
Another acting nomination, Jessica Chastain in Miss Sloan. That just came out pretty recently, I think. She's like a high-powered political consultant. I guess that's pretty timely, huh? What did you think of that one?
Absolutely. This is good. This is good. I like this, too. And I actually think that she should get a nomination. But I have to tell you guys, I can't even talk about any of these women, because Natalie Portman will win these awards. She will win for Jackie, hands down. She is fantastic. If you want to get a glimpse of what Jackie O looks like, what Jackie O felt like, what was in her mind as she sat in the car with JFK, this is the movie. It is really good, and she carries it. Without her, there's no movie.
Did that surprise you at all about her, Reggie? I feel like I like Natalie Portman, but I have seldom loved Natalie Portman. And I don't know, I'm kind of surprised to hear you talking in such glowing terms.
I like this. I think I agree with you. I don't sit at home thinking, let me run and see a Natalie Portman film. she's not one of those people for me. But this performance, fantastic. And, you know, you always have to have a breakout role, and I think this might be it for her. I mean, she's had some good roles, but I think this is it, because it really showcases her. When she's on the screen, she has to produce and she has to project, and people will be able to identify with her and what she brings to the table. Really good job.
Talking right now to film critic Reggie Ponder about the best movies of 2016.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your recommendations, or if you're looking for recommendations from Reggie. What was your favorite movie that you saw in the theater this year? What are you planning to see over the next couple of weeks? Do you have some holiday movie watching ahead of you? What do you think deserves a nomination? What's the best picture or performance of the year that you've seen? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now about the best movies of 2016 with Reggie Ponder, known as Reggie the Real Critic.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite movie that you've seen in 2016 for fun or serious movie business? What should be nominated for Golden Globes if it did or didn't get a nomination for the Oscars when those come around next year? Do you need a recommendation? Do you want to share a recommendation of a movie to watch? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Reggie, I want to ask you about Denzel Washington. He's nominated for Best Actor in a Drama for his performance in Fences. And you said you wouldn't really go for Casey Affleck because you didn't like the character that much. What about Denzel in Fences?
Well, I just want to say, though, I didn't like the character, but I liked Casey. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic mm-hmm. in it. I want to make sure that that's clear. So he is the front runner for winning Best Performance by an actor in a motion picture. But Denzel is right there with him. And Denzel in Fences, for people who don't know about August Wilson's work, I just suggest that people check out August Wilson. He is an American icon, and his writing is just it's so real and relatable, and Denzel brings it to life on the screen. He and Viola, when they're on the screen together, it's actually the whole ensemble, it's it's one of those movies that you will appreciate because it's about a father who is struggling with his own inability to succeed, and how does he raise his son? Does he raise him with hard love, or does he raise him with optimism? And you get to see that struggle, and you actually get to see what happens with that. Great job by Denzel. And if he wins, he's deserving. I think the two guys for me would be Denzel or Casey Affleck.
Here's a listen to Denzel Washington in Fences talking to his son. This is from the trailer.
A man is supposed to take care of his family. You live in my house, fill your belly with my food, put you behind on my bed because you're my son. It's my duty to take care of you. I owe a responsibility to you. I ain't got to like you.
I will be a good father. It's my duty. Right. I don't have to like
you. That's right. That's right. It really, really a good... This is with any of his performances that he's been up for an award for. So again, Denzel does a great job. I know they have Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge. You got Joel Egerton for Loving, which I think was a lovely film. But I don't think any of those guys come close to Casey and Denzel. And I think those are the front runners. And probably Casey is going to edge this one out.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Noah with us in Port Edwards. Noah, hi.
Hi. So I have two movies that both blew me away this year, both from the earlier part of the year. One was called The Witch, and it was sort of a horror movie, sort of a period piece, this really meticulously researched dialogue that was really brought you to this very alien time and place, which was colonial New England back when, you know, people were very concerned about witches. And the other one was 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I know Hollywood doesn't work this way, but if I were voting on it, John Goodman would get my vote for best actor there. He was just doing so many different things. It was just this very thrilling movie. You don't really know what exactly it is you're watching until the very end, and that's really carried on, especially the strength of his performance.
Wow, sounds like a couple of good ones. Noah, thanks for that. Reggie, what do you think of those two?
I really like his comment about John Goodman. Sometimes you get these roles where people, I think, ignore them, but John Goodman did do a lot in this movie, and it was like, wow. I mean, John Goodman put in a really good performance. I just think that those types of films aren't what people would call thespian, you know, these serious kind of films that usually get these kind of nominations. But I really like his comment as it relates to John Goodman.
Noah, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go for another movie recommendation from Bob in Green Bay. Bob, hi.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What do you have for us, Bob?
Well, I've got a favorite, and I've got a question. I don't know if it's necessarily fair to call my favorite of 2016 because it's so fresh in my memory, but I was really impressed with what Disney did with Rogue One. A little grittier than what we're used to seeing, and they didn't hold on to some of those hokey norms that we're used to seeing from the Star Wars movies. But then specifically, I wanted to know if Reggie was as excited as I am for The Hollow Point. I've been watching previews, reading up on it. I'm a big fan of all the actors. It looks like Jim Belushi's trying to make a comeback. Looks to me like a Traffic meets No Country for Old Men, and I'm pumped.
Bob, thanks a lot for that. So Rogue, let's take those one at a time, Reggie. Rogue One, your thoughts.
So Rogue One, I think that The Force Awakens was much better, personally. I know that Rogue One shattered the box office. It did really well at the box office, and it's a good, entertaining film. But you know how sometimes when you're reading a book and it has all this detail, and then sometimes when you go to the movie, you don't really need the detail. I'm not sure I needed Rogue One to fill in the detail for me. It's a fine movie. It's a fun movie. I recommend people go out to see it, but I don't think it even comes close to The Force Awakens.
Before we get to Bob's second suggestion, quick listen to some bickering from the team on Rogue One.
Why does she get a blaster and I don't?
What?
I know how to use it.
That's what I'm afraid of. Give it to me.
We're going to Jeddah. That's a war zone.
That's not the point of... Where'd you get it?
I found it.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
Vague and unconvincing. And Bob had mentioned another movie, Reggie, Hollow Point. I have not seen a preview. I don't know anything about that one.
I actually haven't seen the preview for that one either. I have heard some things about it, but I'm not as excited because I haven't read up on it. Given this is award season, obviously we're just trying to get through these movies for this year, so I'm not as up to speed, if you will, on that movie. I just want to say one other thing about Rogue One.
Sure.
Is that, to me, when you go to the movie, the question I would ask folks, if it's like the best movie of the year, do you remember it? When you walk out of that theater, my question is, do you remember all the stuff that happens? Are you really into it? Now, for Star Wars fans, that might be correct. I want to know from people who aren't really Star Wars fans, who might have gone there to see it for the first time, well, does this movie stick with you? And if it does, I think that that's a mark of a fantastic, a memorable, iconic movie.
That's a great way to think about it. Well, here's one, Reggie, that you saw, Collateral Beauty, and it's got three really heavy hitters in it for the cast. Will Smith, Kate Winslet, and Edward Norton. What did you think of this one?
So this was one where I identified with the characters, but I want to tell you is that I saw this with the Chicago Film Critics contingent, and their awards out as well. They have actually picked their best films, and so I suggest that people go to check that out for the Chicago Film Critics and see what they awarded. And they didn't like it for the most part. This touched me because he was dealing with real elements in life, death, and it just. The characters worked for me, and I thought it was a nice twist. There's some twists in the movie. So for me, this is not a rush out and go see it. But if you've seen all the movies you want to see for the holiday season, I would say, hey, check this one out. I think that you'll be surprised and you'll like it.
Another one on a list you sent us to talk about, Hidden Figures, one I don't know much about. Can you tell us about that one?
That's because it was hidden.
Aha.
Come on.
There you go.
This is about three African-American women who worked for NASA. And most people don't know that women, period, were working for NASA at the time. And they actually did a lot of the math. They were in the background doing a lot of the math for various departments within NASA. And these three African-American women were extremely instrumental in making sure that John Glenn got up and that John Glenn got back. And it really chronicles their story. The history in this is great. And then they have three actors, which is Taraji P. Henson. I don't know why my brain is Octavia Spencer and Janelle Monáe are in it, and
wow.
they're good. I recommend this as well. Not only just from a history perspective, I think it's a fun movie, and the acting is good. I think that. All Octavia and Janelle, I think, are going to be up for some awards for it as well.
Oh, I'm so glad you liked it. I saw the trailer, and it looks so good. I really want to see it. And another trailer that I saw that I thought was for a video game turned out it was for an actual movie, Assassin's Creed. Just briefly, Reggie, what did you think of that one?
So I saw it today. I liked it. I will tell you, I liked it for the action. The action and the fight scenes and all that is you will be pleased. I think that the story was a bit convoluted. Maybe that might be because I'm not a game player. So I'd like to hear from the people who play that game if they felt that this movie was that the movie did the game justice. It's good. It's not great, but I enjoyed it. I wouldn't run out and go check it out.
Reggie, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for the serenade at the beginning.
You're welcome. Like I said, the most wonderful time of the year. You guys have a fantastic holiday season, and it's always a pleasure.
Same to you. That was Reggie Ponder, known as Reggie the Real Critic, on Central Time.
You know, people love the show, so why the hell don't I love the show? That was my attitude, finally, after 5 years of struggling in theater and different things and some really lousy movies. I decided that, yeah, I'm going to accept this. I'll embrace it.
Well, maybe you remember that voice. Adam West, star of the TV show Batman. He was talking to Boise State Public Radio about his career there and his embrace of the show that he had felt bad about for a while. Here's the thing. You may be out there looking for a last-minute present for someone, that hard-to-buy-for person, the proverbial person who has everything.
Well, they probably don't have this. Original paintings of the villains from the old Batman TV show, painted by Batman himself, the man we just heard, Adam West.
An exhibit of West paintings opens up tomorrow in Ketchum, Idaho. West recently moved to Idaho from L.A. The exhibit title, Criminals on Canvas.
And the paintings themselves are kind of surreal. West says he's capturing more the attitude of villains like the Joker, the Riddler, and other favorites.
Well, I don't know. This would be, there's someone in your life you'd give these to. I don't know what they're going to sell for. It might
is
be a
there
lot.
Someone in my life, I don't know who I would give that to. It's but it's a cool idea.
It's the gift of the Magi. I'm getting you Joker. You're giving me the Penguin.
Yeah,
and we'll have them both up in our office. That'd actually really cool. I'd love to have the Adam West
really cool,
Joker
actually.
Painting in our office. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.